You know that feeling when you get home and you finally get to take off your bra? Terrible news. You're never going to experience that sweet relief ever again. Not if you buy your next bra from today's sponsor, Honeylove, anyway. For a limited time only, you can get Honeylove on sale. Get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/weirdest. Support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/weirdest. I have a contentious relationship with bras at best, but when I put on Honeylove's crossover bra, I honestly forget I'm wearing it. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/weirdest. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/weirdest. After you purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. The best way to make the most of the time you've got is to know what matters most to you. Therapy can help you figure that out. A great therapist can help you deal with everything from major trauma to everyday annoyances. But it can be tough and time-consuming to find any therapist, let alone a great one. If you're really struggling to get started, it might be worth checking out BetterHelp. All you have to do to get matched with a licensed therapist is fill out a short questionnaire. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/weirdest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weirdest. At Popular Science, we report and write dozens of science and tech stories every week. And while most of the stuff we stumble across makes it into our articles, we also find plenty of weird facts that we just keep around the office. So we figured, why not share those with you? Welcome to The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week from the editors of Popular Science. I'm Rachel Feltman.
I'm Clara Moskowitz.
And I'm Lee Billings.
Welcome to the show. It's so great
to
have you guys.
Yay. Thank you.
Listeners, both of our guest hosts today are from Scientific American. And there's a reason for that. It's that I am going to be hopping over to host Scientific American's show Science Quickly, in addition to The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week. Don't worry, Weirdest Thing is not going anywhere. But pretty soon, you will be able to hear me three times a week, which is as much as anyone would ever want to hear my voice, I think. And I would love
Can't
to-
Can't be too much, Rachel.
Thank you. You're very kind. But I would love to see some of you weirdos over in the Science Quickly feed. So this is our little celebratory crossover episode to get you excited, to make sure that you go over and check that out. But for today, I am here with two excellent Scientific American reporters who are frequently on Science Quickly. And we are all here to talk about the eclipse.
That's right. It's pretty weird.
It's a weird thing.
It's weird.
It does get weird. So on The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week, we start by each offering up a little tease about some kind of fact or story that we found in the course of reading, writing, reporting, etc., and decide which one we just absolutely have to hear more about first. Then once we've all had time to spin our little science yarns, we reconvene and decide what the weirdest thing we learned this week actually was, in a chill, non-competitive way. Also, actually, before we get into the show, I do want to say, listeners, I made a call out last episode about how much I want to get like John and Hank Green and like Brennan Lee Mulligan on this show. And several of you are now like campaigning on the like Nerd Fighters Reddit. And it's really heartwarming to me. You're being very flattering and I'm very humbled. And even if it does not lead to one of those people becoming a guest on the show, I love hearing from you guys. I feel like some of my listeners think that my inbox is inundated. And when they email me, they're like very apologetic about it. You guys, it's not. I hardly hear from listeners. And when I do, it really, I'm like, oh, right. There are many of you. So please never hesitate to send me a nice email. I literally will always be happy to receive it. And thank you so much.
Did you just call it? Do a shout out to the, was it the Nerd Fight subreddit? Was that what it was? That's a thing?
Yeah, the Nerd Fighters nerd subreddit. Fighters. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because, you know, if we wanted to get John and Hank Green, we just got to cut a wrestling style promo, right? Just, John and Hank Green, I'm coming for you. You think you're good science explicators? You ain't nothing. You got to come hang out on this show with Rachel and have a throwdown. She'll come out the top turnbuckle and slam jam you guys. Can you tell I don't really watch wrestling? I'm trying.
I honestly, you had me fooled. I thought it was a great approximation.
Okay.
But listen, I think at this point it's basically in the bag. So thank you for that.
I'll do what I can.
Anyway, now we can get to our teases. So my tease is that I want to talk about all of the ways that eclipses have freaked us out throughout human history. And some of these stories are terrifying, some are heartwarming, and they're all pretty weird because humans usually are. Clara, what's your tease?
Okay. This is the most cosmically perfect time in the history of the universe.
Wow.
How's that?
Ooh. Wow.
I love how that sounds. I don't really feel that way. It doesn't feel cosmically perfect, but I'm excited to hear how. Lee, what's your tease?
The eclipse gives us a chance to understand the very profoundly, deeply weird behavior of the sun.
Ooh,
nice.
Is that too much? Good. Is it not enough? I could go in more detail. I mean, is that enough of a tease? I feel like that's just like a little ankle. I'm not sure how much leg.
Perfect tease.
Okay.
A little amuse-bouche is what we look good, for good. Here. So I'm very excited to hear both of those, but I have a rule that I never make guests go first. So since you are both fresh to the show, though hopefully I'll get you back pretty soon. But for today, I will kick us off. I have just kind of an assortment of facts about how humans have interpreted, reacted to, run away screaming from eclipses throughout history. And I guess I should say before we get started, we should probably, in case listeners have like really been not paying attention to the news, God bless, there is an eclipse coming up very shortly. What is it exactly?
It is on April 8th.
April 8th.
I blank.
April 8th.
April 8th. Thank you. See, over at Science Quickly, they're on top of these things.
And it's the last eclipse.
To covering the
total
news.
Solar eclipse. Outside of like a little tiny like snippet of Alaska, like I think maybe in the Aleutian Islands or something. It's the last time anyone in the United States and really most of North America is going to be able to see a total eclipse until, is it like the, it's like a
2040.
Yeah, it's a ways off. So unless you want to, you know, be part of the jet set and go some exotic locale, this is your best bet coming up in April.
Yeah. So listeners, if you have not yet looked at a map of the path of totality, look at it and try to get to one of those places. It's very cool. I saw my first solar eclipse back in 2017. Yes, that's when that happened.
Yeah, me too.
I went to St. Louis for it pretty unexpectedly. I hadn't planned on making a trip for it. And I was like, whoa. I'm eclipse pilled. I'm very into this now. I'm really looking forward to it.
You may want to have a very slight addendum there very quickly, which is simply that you should look at the eclipse map, look at the path of totality that's going to sweep across the, you know, from Mexico all the way to Canada, and then cry. Because pretty much everywhere in that path, you're not going to find an Airbnb. You're not going to find a motel. You're going to be lucky to find like
a piece
of ground to sleep on in a sleeping bag.
Exactly. By the side of a highway, if you're lucky.
But you could do it.
Fair enough. Good point. But, if you happen to have an old college roommate, take a road trip, I don't know, like see if you can make something happen. But it's true. It may already be too late.
But just don't freak out. Don't freak out, though, when you see it. Because people freak out sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, all through human history. Thank you. Thank you for that segue, Lee. So our oldest visual representation of a solar eclipse could be these fairly innocuous looking mounds of stone in County Meath, Ireland. This is called the Loughcrew Cairns. And these grassy humps, they date back to around 3300 BC, which makes the cairn a good 1,000 years older than Stonehenge. And some research think that this is also a you know, stone figure meant to represent astrological phenomena. It features a lot of large stones with intricate carvings of like seemingly abstract shapes. There's a lot of spirals. It's very spiral heavy. I'll post a picture on popsci.com/weird. And as always, that will also be on my Patreon. There's like diamonds, just a lot of scrawls. And most importantly, for our purposes, one of the cairns shows a very large carving of overlapping concentric circles, which is a very common visual representation of the sun being eclipsed and then revealed by the moon. But can you really say a bunch of squiggles represent a solar eclipse? Then in 2002, an archaeo astronomer, great job, Paul Griffin, compared the age of the site to calculations of when solar eclipses should have been visible in the area. And he found a pretty good match. He found one that would have happened just around sunset on November 30th, 3340 BC. And he argued that the other symbols on the cairns might actually represent the stars that become visible due to the darkness created by the eclipse. Very cool, very evocative. Of course, some scientists like very strongly disagree with this interpretation. There's no written record to prove or disprove it. That's kind of the issue with looking 5,000 years into the past. We can say confidently what was going on in the sky. A lot harder to piece together what was going on the ground.
I think the problem is that people who time travelers from the future, they go back and they're like trying to verify these things, and then they just get carried away with like their power trip, and they're just like, my God, it's your sun god, bow before me, like when it happens, and then that's the last we ever hear of them, because they go become leaders of some tribe in prehistory.
Clearly.
Yeah, it's true. Those time travelers, they never come back with anything useful to say. But what's cool about this site is that archaeologists had previously noted the presence of charred human remains from around 50 individuals, and they were placed in a basin just in front of the biggest carving, which of course, you know, suggests some kind of ceremonial sacrifice. And what's interesting about that, we're getting into the like eclipses really freaked people out and how there's evidence of human sacrifice perhaps being practiced in other parts of the world when solar eclipses occurred, even if it was otherwise uncommon. For example, the Inca people are thought to have fasted and offered up human sacrifices during eclipses, which was not like kind of a regular everyday activity for them. They worshipped a sun god, and that god was generally believed to be very benevolent. But eclipses, they were like, he's not happy. What can we do about that?
All these time travelers showing up saying that our sun god's being eaten. I guess they're on the chopping block. Now we know what happened to them.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's all coming together. There are several instances in prehistory where there are carvings that people say, you know, maybe this was some kind of recording of an eclipse. I found one quote from a researcher saying, virtually any squiggle can be imagined to be a solar eclipse. So, you know, take that as a grain of salt. But there are some compelling petroglyphs in this nature in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico. From 1097, there would have been an eclipse there. And then there were some more events there in the 13th century. And those all happened right before there was this like mass exodus of peoples who lived in that region. And, you know, some astronomers and archaeologists are like, it's not necessarily that the eclipse made them leave. There's signs there was like a lot of drought. But you have to imagine that if things were bad and then there were like several eclipses in a row, they maybe were like,
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We get it. I'll talk about a few other, ways that people reacted to eclipses throughout history. In 1200 BC, Chinese scribes recorded eclipses on tortoise shells and basically ox bones. And these were called oracle bones. And there are some records where they literally wrote, "The sun has been eaten." Very common theme. I'll get back to that. One thing that's interesting is that they were very blasé at the same kind of time and place about lunar eclipses. They like said they were like common and it was like no big deal. And I guess it, you know, you can certainly imagine being freaked out by the moon turning red, but it's like a lot inherently freakier for the sun to go away.
Way freakier.
Yeah. Looking at all of these things, I was like, it's easy to sort of be like, oh, you know, how silly, they thought the sun was being eaten. But I think it would actually be like, it would actually be very troubling for a human with no outside information to look up, see the sun disappearing and be like, that's probably fine. Like,
I mean, I literally can't think of anything like more existentially terrifying.
Yeah. I think about, you know, I've talked on Weirdest Thing about like the year without summer when, you know, famously that's when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein and, you know, there was this volcanic eruption that like really messed with the climate. And there was like, there's no real sun. It's cold. The crops are dying. And even then, when some people had access to like the news, I still think about how the everyday average person must have been like, so the world is ending, yeah?
Right. I mean, I felt like that when I saw my first eclipse and I knew what it was. And it's still you're told what's going to happen. And then it actually like gets dark and cold suddenly in the middle of the day and the sun manifestly has been eaten. And you're like, oh my God, I can't handle this. What, like you have this sensory reaction of utter terror, right? Yeah. Totally. And that's when you fully know exactly what is happening and why.
Yeah. I think anyone who like scoffs too much at these ancient theories about eclipses has like probably never seen a total eclipse because it's really intense. In China, they believed that a dragon ate the sun. And so what they would do is they would bang drums to scare away the dragon. And you got to think about the fact that it always worked, you know? The sun always came back. So
100%
they were onto something.
Yep.
Fair point.
And similarly, ancient Hindu mythology involved a dragon, but it's kind of a more elaborate story. There's this legend that a demon that was in the form of a dragon wanted to get an elixir of the gods to become immortal. And so the demon disguised itself as a woman, but then was discovered and then was beheaded as punishment. But the demon had managed to take a sip of the elixir before getting beheaded. So its head is now immortal and is in relentless pursuit of the sun. And so it swallows the sun, but it has no neck. So the sun comes right back out the back of its head. People are so creative. I'm in awe. In Western Siberia, it was said that a vampire tried to swallow the sun and then it was hot. So he spit it out. In Bolivia and in Korea, there were similarly fire dogs that were sent to steal the sun, but then like couldn't keep it in their mouths because it was too hot. Again, like makes sense.
Yeah.
It gets eaten, they spit it back out. The sun being eaten, again, really common theme. I think it makes sense when you think about the way the sun gradually disappears as it's eclipsed. Choctaw legend said that it was a mischievous black squirrel. And they also believed that you needed to frighten it away with loud noise. There were also some tribes that would shoot arrows into the sky to reignite the sun, which, again, like, genius.
Worked every time.
Given the available data. And yes, worked every time. The Pomo people of Northern California envisioned a great cranky bear ambling through the heavens and biting the sun when it didn't move out of the way.
I think that's my favorite.
In Norse mythology.
That's my favorite so far.
Yeah. Yes, because there's no malicious intent. It's just like,
a bear just ambling around trying to get along. Yeah. All of a sudden, the sun's in the way. What are you going to do? Yeah. You're going to bite it. Get out of the way, son.
Yeah. Looks biteable. In Norse mythology, there's another sun-eating legend involving Loki. Loki fathered, among other things, a god-slaying giant wolf, which then had its own children, the wolves Skull and Hati. And then in the end times, Skull is going to eat the sun, but I guess he's trying and failing every time there's an eclipse.
He's just rehearsing. Yeah,
exactly. He's practicing. He's spitting it out. And then getting away from eating, sometimes another very common flavor of eclipse myth is that the sun is, we've done something bad that to make the sun go away. There's a Transylvanian folktale where the sun is like so horrified by humans' behavior that it goes away. And then it sends a toxic dew down, because dew does often appear during eclipses because of the temperature drop. There's just a burst of condensation. It's not poisonous, of course, but they did not trust the sky dew, which I guess, again, it's a fair thing. In Suriname, there was a tribe that believed that the sun and moon were brothers, and they were having a really violent fight during an eclipse. So like one of them got punched out, basically. There was also a West African, a couple of groups that believed that when humans fought too much, the sun and the moon would start to fight because they were just like, the vibes have become so toxic. And so during an eclipse, it was their practice to make amends for old feuds and rivalries, because you had to make peace to encourage the sun and the moon to also make peace. And again, it worked every time.
Yes.
So I love that some of these like actually had like a pretty positive spin, including there are several Aboriginal groups in Australia where the sun and the moon are not fighting at all. They're actually in love. And when they get together, they want a little privacy. So you have the eclipse. And some of these groups actually think that the stars that you can see in the darkness of an eclipse are the children. Nice. That result from that union. Wow. Which I think is very lovely. There were some cultures that worshipped the moon, and they celebrated the solar eclipses as brief total victories over the sun. Again, very fair.
I like the emotional arc of all of these, because like, for everybody who thought it was like this retribution or this doom or something awful had happened, like imagine that feeling. And then like 3 minutes later being like, oh, phew, yeah. Dodged a bullet. I guess we're not that bad after all. I guess we're not being
doomed. Not condemned to eternal torment. Exactly. And you know, similarly, there is kind of maybe a survivor's bias here where like there are probably some subpar stories too and explanations. You know, someone's just like, oh yeah, that's just the sun just got tired, turned off for a little bit. And no one, and those don't come down to us because they're not super compelling, right? So yeah.
Totally.
I think that we do see this reflection of ourselves and what really appeals to us and makes us tick in the stories we tell about these sorts of things. And it's interesting to see how, you know, some of these kind of had really some pretty big nuggets of truth. The sun and moon are fighting. Describe it to some prehistoric tribes person. I just like that's what's happening, man. I'm not going to tell you about angular diameter and stuff and you know, sidereal time. Yep. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, ancient people did often have like, you know, what might be a surprisingly good understanding of what was going on in the sky. We know that, of course, the Maya and the Aztec people did learn to predict eclipses using math that I won't get into because I don't feel like it. But there will be links to more info on popsci.com/weird and on my Patreon. But the long and short of it is that they were able to calculate when eclipses would most likely happen That being said, they didn't know where they would be, and eclipses can be visible in very small parts of the world and not in others. So it was pretty complicated to actually, predict where one would happen. But they did start to know when they would happen. So the long and short of it is that ancient people did eventually learn to predict eclipses, and then, you know, figured out that they had something to do with shadows, and then more specifically the moon. And here we are now with the ability to know exactly when and where eclipses will appear, and even like exactly how long we'll have in totality at a given point, which is so incredible. And yet they will still be really freaky when you see them happen. And I think that's awesome. I think so much has changed, and also very little has changed about the human experience of the eclipse. Cool. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with some more weird facts.
You know that feeling when you get home and you finally get to take off your bra? Terrible news. You're never going to experience that sweet relief ever again. Not if you buy your next bra from today's sponsor, Honeylove, anyway. For a limited time only, you can get Honeylove on sale. Get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/weirdest. Support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/weirdest. I have a contentious relationship with bras at best. Underwire is just so pokey and uncomfortable, but when I put on Honeylove's crossover bra, I honestly forget I'm wearing it. Until I look in the mirror, that is, because it looks great. Honeylove's crossover bra gives all the support of a traditional bra without using any underwire. It also features mesh panels that are both breathable and, like, a little bit sexy. I don't know, maybe I just think everything I wear is really sexy. But anyway, it doesn't stop there. Honeylove has more than just bras. They also have really comfortable shapewear. I know, seriously, comfortable shapewear. Tanks and leggings for everyday support. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/weirdest. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/weirdest. After you purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. Did you know that people used to compete to see how many live goldfish they could swallow at once? If you didn't, I mean, you should go back and listen to our episode about it. That's like super embarrassing for you, but no judgment. Anyway, believe it or not, eating live goldfish is not the best way to get protein on the go. Luckily, there's an easy way to eat better. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals are as fresh as you can get if you don't want to feel your dinner wriggle on its way down. And each dietitian-approved, chef-crafted dish is ready to heat and eat in just 2 minutes. It's also really flexible, and you can change your meal program to suit your needs. So, like, are you having more of a 6 goldfish kind of day or a 30 goldfish kind of day? Go ahead and pause your delivery anytime or add more Factor meals to your order. Factor is cheaper than takeout and way more socially acceptable than swallowing live goldfish. And it's probably better for you than both. Head to factormeals.com/weirdest50 and use code weirdest50 to get 50% off. That's code weirdest50 at factormeals.com/weirdest50 to get 50% off.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Okay, we're back. And Lee, tell us, how little we know about the sun, I guess. Or are we going to learn more? I don't know.
You know, I got to say, I don't entirely understand all the reasons why we don't entirely understand the sun, or this aspect of the sun I'm about to talk about, because it does get pretty complicated. However, the gist is that there is something around the sun called the corona. And you see it very prominently when the moon slides into almost perfect position over the sun to block its light, block its disk, and it reduces all the glare. And all of a sudden, this thing, this wispy, ethereal, almost misty thing can be seen with many tendrils all around the sun. That's the corona. It is superheated, or I don't know if it's actually technically superheated, but it's very hot plasma, rarefied gas, ionized gas, and it can be millions of degrees in temperature, whether you're looking at Kelvin or Celsius or Fahrenheit, millions of degrees in all cases. And what's really weird is that the sun's surface, its visible surface, or, you know, its photosphere, and there's a little transitional thing called the chromosphere. It's kind of in between the corona and the photosphere, whatever. It is not nearly that hot. The surface of the sun is only thousands of degrees, a couple thousands of degrees. And then we have this super duper much hotter thing around it. And people can't really figure out how the energy gets from point A to point B, so to speak. And to be clear, it's not so much that, oh, we just don't understand. It's just a fundamental mystery. We'll never know. It's not that. It's rather that
tide goes in, tide goes out. You can't explain that.
What it is that there are multiple different plausible mechanisms by which this could occur, and it's really hard to discern between them. But the best time to look, the best time to try to discern, is during an eclipse, because that's when you have the moon in the way blocking out all the glare, and you can see the corona and eruptive prominences of plasma that are entrained in huge magnetic loops emerging from deep within the sun, so on and so forth. And so you can test these different theories. I don't know if we're ever going to get resolution on it, though, but it is very weird. Very weird indeed. The reason why it's weird is just because we don't fully understand why it's so freaking hot. And, you know, to be clear, it's hot in a kind of a kinetic or thermodynamic sense, which what I mean is that if you stuck your hand out in there, in the corona, you probably wouldn't feel too much. Or what you'd really feel is just your skin going, from the radiation, the luminosity of the sun itself way deeper down. But it's rarefied. It's very, very, it's not dense. It's not, if it's a soup, it's very, very, very dilute. But every single little particle in that of plasma in the corona is moving very fast, which translates to being very hot. And so again, they don't understand why they being the scientists, you know, scientist types, don't really understand why and how this energy transfer takes place. You know, I've never gotten a satisfactory answer. Maybe one weird aspect of this is I've never understood quite why it's so weirdly hard to explain, because I've never gotten a satisfactory answer kind of about the so what question. It just seems to be one of these things where it's like, well, that is kind of weird. And then did you find $5? What happened after that, Mr. Heliophysicist? because it doesn't really seem that gaining this knowledge is going to somehow move the needle on anything, as far as I can tell. And, you know, look, I'm a firm subscriber to the idea that the best way to get the right answer to something is to confidently propose the wrong answer in a public forum. So please, readers, someone who's actually a heliophysicist, explain to me, show me why this matters, other than just inherent coolness. And I'm all about inherent coolness, but I guess I don't quite necessarily see the newsworthiness of it. I'm sorry, heliophysicists. I really love you. I really want to love you, but you know. Big dumb rocks like planets are so much cooler. Hey, speaking of which, can I have a bonus? Can I throw a bonus weird thing in here real quick?
Oh, please. Yeah, right. We love bonus weird things.
Okay, so one thing that I really jam on hard with eclipses is not just solar eclipses. It's stellar eclipses. Stellar eclipses. Mm. So what do we mean by that? We're talking about, I'm not saying sun or solar, we're saying stellar. So we're talking about other stars. One of the coolest ways that we find planets these days is basically eclipses. We call them transits. It's when a planet transits, crosses the face of its star as seen from Earth, and casts a little shadow towards us here, just like how the moon crosses the face of the sun and casts a shadow to Earth on a much smaller scale. And we're talking, you know, these planets, usually when they pass across these stars, you know, they're thousands of light years away. They dim the star usually less than like a window pane is going to dim the light passing through it. It's remarkable that we can even detect this stuff. But what's even more remarkable is that we can use that eclipse that stellar eclipse, that transit, to do things like sniff out signs of life on Earth-like planets and so on and so forth. And of course, folks are really excited about doing that with the James Webb Space Telescope and other resources and other facilities that can look at these transits very closely over time and see the little tiny smidgen of starlight that shines through the little limb, the little, you know, tremulous, barest whiff of atmosphere that might be around this rock, this orb, and they can see basically, you know, some of the gases and some of the chemistry there. That to me is super duper weird, and that we can do that, and moreover that while we do that somewhere out there, if you think about the ecliptic plane, which by the way during an eclipse pops out beautifully. If you ever go see an eclipse, one thing you'll notice that people don't tell you about is that it gets all dark. You see the corona, and then you see all the planets just in this straight line on each side of the sun, the other planets in the ecliptic plane, the big kind of remnant of the disk from which we all formed. Well, what that means is that anything that's along that ecliptic plane from far away is seeing us in transit from some geometrical viewpoint. And I just kind of, every now and then I'll just kind of make my brain effervesce thinking about that, about how, you know, maybe somewhere out there, you know, in some other nearby part of the Milky Way, some three-eyed green-skinned alien is looking through their telescope and seeing this little tiny dot, this little diminution in light, and they're maybe sniffing and seeing its atmosphere, and that's us.
That's cool.
That's really fun. I love that you brought transits in, because I feel like the period of my life as a science journalist where I was writing the most from day to day was when Kepler was really just like churning out planets. And I always thought it was so cool how much stuff we could learn from really just little eclipses happening somewhere else.
Little eclipses. And,
well, if anyone's looking at us out there, I hope they're not too horrified by what they find. we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with one more fact.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time to spend. But what would you actually spend an extra hour every day on? The best way to make the most of the time you've got is to know what matters most to you. Therapy can help you figure that out. I've worked with therapists for most of my life, and therapy is hugely important to me. A great therapist can help you deal with everything from major trauma to everyday annoyances. But it can be tough and time-consuming to find any therapist, let alone a great one. If you're really struggling to get started, it might be worth checking out BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online, so it's meant to be super convenient and flexible. All you have to do to get matched with a licensed therapist is fill out a short questionnaire. If it's not a good fit, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/weirdest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weirdest. The best way to learn a language is immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards for you this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by more than 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's accessible tips and tools are helping me keep up my admittedly kind of terrible German skills. And when I actually remember to use it every day, Babbel even helps me improve those German skills. The best thing about Babbel is that it's designed to fit into even the busiest schedule. Seriously, I have no excuse. And it's made to suit anyone's learning style. Babbel's lessons are also rooted in real-life situations and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're immediately ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee, so you've got literally nothing to lose but your monolingual status. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/weirdest. Get 55% off at babbel.com/weirdest. Spelled BABBEL.com/weirdest. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay, we're back. And Claire is going to tell us about the amazing cosmic coincidence that is our existence and also eclipses. Please explain.
Totally. So I described in my teaser as this being the cosmically most perfect time in the history of the universe. I just want to clarify, a lot of things are going really badly at this time, but cosmically, I should say, celestially, in terms of what we can see, this is the perfect moment because the fact that we can see eclipses at all is just this complete coincidence. It's not guaranteed. Not only is it not guaranteed, it's really not very likely. You can't see eclipses from any of the other rocky planets in our solar system. Just a lot of things have to go completely right to make what we're going to see on April 8th possible. So if you think about it, we have the face of the moon coming in and perfectly blocking out the face of the sun, which is weird because the moon and the sun are really not the same size at all. And they're also really not the same distance at all away from each other. And it just so happens that the sun is 400 times larger than the moon, but it's also 400 times farther away from Earth. And it all works out just completely perfectly so that they are the same size on the sky. And that way you don't get this ring of the sun around a smaller moon, making it just kind of not a cool sight. And you also don't block out the corona, which is what makes an eclipse so cool. Like, you get to see the corona, but not the face of the sun, which certainly wasn't guaranteed to happen. So yeah, not only is it just an amazing spectacle, but it's also this cool scientific opportunity, as Lee was talking about, for us to really learn about the atmosphere of the sun. So the fact that this happens is due to a number of factors, right? One of them is that our moon is actually pretty large for a moon compared to the size of Earth. No other rocky planet in the solar system has a moon big enough to cause a total eclipse. And we're just, you know, the whole story of the moon is just this crazy, crazy event that took place that could have nearly destroyed our planet entirely. Like, it could have tipped either way, right? You know, yeah. We could have had absolutely nothing, or we could have had this really awesome moon that makes our life on this planet possible and also makes eclipses possible. And that's what we
got. Tide goes in, tide goes out. Can't explain that.
Exactly.
Right. So speaking of the tides, so the tides are a result of this, you know, the moon tugging on the Earth, and they're actually destabilizing the dynamics of our orbit, the Earth's orbit and the moon's orbit, so that the moon is gradually getting farther and farther away from Earth. So this isn't going to be possible in the far future, and it wasn't possible in the far past, because obviously the distance between the Earth and the moon is critical to achieve this perfect matching up of size on the sky. So if you zoom out 620 million years into the future, the moon will have drifted far enough away from the Earth that you'll only see partial eclipses. You'll not ever be able to see a total eclipse of the sun at that point. You know, who knows if we'll still be around or care anymore. But it's worth noting that be glad you live now and not 620 million years into the future. You know, and then billions of years ago, of course, when the moon was much closer to Earth, eclipses probably also... The moon was too big, so it blocked out the corona. So you just, you know, it wasn't quite the show, the spectacle that it
just,
is now.
Just dark, just terrifying.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right, not cool, just dark.
All those single-celled organisms were terrified, let me tell you.
So yeah. And then furthermore, as Lee says, it's also quite rare to have these because this has to do with the way Earth's orbit is actually offset from the plane of the moon's orbit. The moon's orbit is tilted 5 degrees away from the tilt of the plane of the Earth's orbit. And if the two match, then we would actually have a total solar eclipse every time we had a new moon. You know, it would just completely block it once a month, and we would be like so ho-hum about it, which might actually be cool. We would, you know, all get to see this all the time. But it's special because it happens rarely because of this orbital mismatch. So things have to line up, you know, just in this amazingly perfect way. And also, since most of the Earth's surface is covered in ocean, when they do happen, it's usually someplace where people can't see it. So that's why you have to wait 2 decades to see the next one over North America after this one, if you miss it, because it's just not a usual occurrence. So many things have to line up just right. All the more reason to go pitch your tent on the side of a highway somewhere in Texas and take your shot.
Yeah. And speaking of taking your shot, now is a great time to remind people to not stare directly at the sun, it's hiding behind the moon. It will mess you up. Get eclipse glasses. They're not regular sunglasses. They're different. They're better. You could use welding shields if you have those lying around. But if not, you need to get some special eclipse glasses. Or if you're really out of luck and you have not found one, I highly recommend, first of all, you can Google just like how to make a little contraption to watch the sort of shadow of the moon over the sun. Or you can just look at the ground because like that thing happens. There's probably a name for it, but like
the shadows.
Everything. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Shadows.
the shadow people come. But, no. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But specifically, the shadows are all like cool little like, you know, crescent slivers. It's very fun.
Right.
The last time I saw an eclipse, I kind of split my time looking up through my eclipse glasses and looking down at the shadows being cast on the ground. So all I'm saying is, if you really miss the boat on getting eclipse glasses, don't be like, I guess I might as well look up at the sun and burn my eyeballs. There's other stuff you can do.
Yeah, just look at the ground. Look at the ground. No, but I mean, no, for real though. But that's what's so crazy, right? Is the richness of the experience across so many different sensory aspects. It gets colder. Your color perception changes as the light diminishes so quickly. Your rods and cones are going haywire in your retina. Just what? And so things that, you know, the reds and the oranges fade away. The blues and the greens come to prominence. Could even get a purplish tinge to them, a lavender hue. Sometimes people call it silver. And you know, the animals get quiet, they get loud. It is a full spectrum experience. And so there's no wrong way to do it except, as you said, to stare up directly at the big glowing ball in the sky. Please don't do that. You know, and apparently I heard that this is like a common misconception that some people believe, you know, oh, well, so when the eclipse is at its most intense, when the eclipse is happening, that's when I can't look, right? So, but if it's a partial eclipse, cool, I can kind of look up real quick and kind of just, you know, get the real quick after image of just a little crescent bitten out of the, you know, out of the sun and consequently out of my retinas. But whatever you do, don't look straight at the eclipse when it's actually taking place and you see the corona, and it's the exact opposite, right? So you can't do it wrong, except just don't, you got to use protection. You really do.
Unless it's the totality, in which you totally can just look at it with your bare naked eye and it's safe because there's no sun.
Yes.
The corona doesn't hurt your eye. But you have reminded me to pack my colander. I was going to forget, but I'm putting it in my suitcase. Colanders are the perfect little thing to use to get those cool, wiggly, weird shadows on the ground.
Yes, yes.
Totally. Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining. Listeners, you can catch some more eclipse-related content and just awesome other stuff over at Scientific American Science Quickly Feed, which, again, I will soon be hosting at. Get on over there, subscribe, rate, review, etc. I'll see you over there soon. And Claire and Lee, thanks again so much.
Thank you all. And like Rachel said, we will not kidnap her from this. Like, you know, she's going to keep doing this, but we're going to be using her a lot, right? So you guys really do need to come over to this other place. Like it's going to be real cool. It's going to be a party over there. Free booze.
The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week is produced by all of our hosts, including me, Rachel Faltman, along with Jess Bodie, who also serves as our audio engineer and editor extraordinaire. Our theme music is by Billy Cadden. Our logo is by Katie Beloff. If you have questions, suggestions, or weird stories to share, tweet us at weirdest_thing. Thanks for listening, weirdos.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The best way to learn a language is immersion. But if that's not in the cards for you this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's accessible tips and tools are helping me keep up my admittedly kind of terrible German skills. It's designed to fit into even the busiest schedule. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. So you've got literally nothing to lose but your monolingual status. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/weirdest. Get 55% off at babbel.com/weirdest, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L.com/weirdest. Rules and restrictions may apply.